All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm joined by Teen Challenge, Ms. Jennifer Harper, who is the Associate Director, Mr. Bobby Usborne, an intern intake specialist, and Ms. Jacqueline Klein.
Yes.
Who is?
Admissions specialist.
Admissions specialist. Yes. And before we went to break, you know, to be able to get to a point in your life where you say, I'm at the wit's end, you know, I can't do this myself. My life is out of control. If I don't fix me, I can't fix my family. Excuse me. When you come to that place in your life, and it doesn't happen in an instance, you know, you have to give it real hard thought, and which is what you did. For every one person like you who's able to come there, there are thousands and tens of thousands who can't and who haven't been able to and whose lives have remained where they are and whose spirits have been broken. So when you talk to the person who's fortunate enough, because the people who you're dealing with are the exception, not the rules. The rule is people's lives remain that way until they leave this planet. So when you talk to people, let's talk about why it's so important that you have experienced that and you can connect with them.
Because I can meet them on a level. I can meet them right where they're at. I can say, hey, I've been there. And it sounds like a simple thing, but it's really not. I actually just had somebody call me up. And the application process was way too difficult to complete and kept saying, that's not going to happen. I would say, you have to fill out the application. Well, that's not going to happen. You have to go get this physical and blood work. Well, that's just not going to happen. And would hang up the phone. And when I pursued and called her back, I said, hey, listen, I understand what you're going through. I am a graduate of the program. And now look at me now. I'm a staff member. I am doing something good, right? And I'm giving back. And my life has purpose. So I understand where you're at. And this is where you could eventually be. And that was a game changer for her. That was an absolute game changer. She said, when you told me that you had been through the program, it changed everything for me.
You know, Jennifer, how successful, you know, for every Jacqueline, mm-hmm. there are many others who, and so we don't want to, you know, mislead people that because you come, there's some magic potion that you guys have that right. You can sprinkle on somebody and their life changes. It is a difficult thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it's really up to the individual, right?
It is. You think about how big of a problem addiction is. You're going to have to match that force with something as powerful, maybe just a little bit more. And so we've got all this structure. And people noticed our programs. This was decades ago, and did a study because they noticed there was a success rate that seemed higher from comparable programs. And so there was an independent study done by a university that put it at an 87% success rate. And that's really, really high.
Program?
And Teen Challenge overall. Most recovery programs, like 2, 3, maybe 5%, you're really killing
right.
it. And we that worked in Teen Challenge thought, gosh, that seems a little high. Because you see relapse, you see that kind of rocky road initially and then some stabilization. And so about 3 years ago, a university conducted another study, again, separate, observed multiple centers. Ours was one of them, and put it at a 76% success rate. Well, that's still, in the space of recovery, huge. And so what is the big difference? And we actually have the privilege of being able to find that out, because people that come in our program have been to multiple 30, 60, 90-day short-term programs, and they've gotten good tools. They're like, this helped me. I was able to learn this. But what was the difference? We ask that all the time. And they say it's Jesus, it's faith, it's knowing who I am in Christ. That's what changed. So it's almost like, hey, those other programs were great. It was really good foundation, but there was this missing piece. So we do see tragedy. Not everybody is ready for change. And that's hard, but it's worth doing what we do because of people like Jacqueline and Bobby, and I could name so many others, and anybody who really wants it can have it.
You know, what's a phone number that people can call who may be interested in Teen Challenge?
414-748-HELP. That's 414-748-4357, and you'll get me.
You know, so not many people on their own volition walk in, usually a loved one who's kind of said, listen, I'm a parent, you know, listen, I've had it, you know, if you don't get your act together, we're going to disown you, we're going to, you're embarrassing the family, and you know, you didn't grow up in this kind of environment, we didn't do this, and you're embarrassing us, and all of those kinds of things. That's not the right approach, is it, when you're trying to help somebody in recovery?
Correct. I get more phone calls from family members that are desperate than the actual person themselves. And it presents a real challenge. I sit and stare out my desk window sometimes, and I'm thinking about all the hurt and loss and people out there in the world that could really use us. And in reality, there's so many, they should be lined up at our door and we should have a waiting list. And here I am presented with this challenge and we're reaching out to the community. And so that really says something about how big of a hold addiction really has on a person. And so when you want to sit there and point the finger and blame that person, well, at that point, it's no longer, you know, it's a real thing.
So you guys are in Milwaukee. I don't have to tell you the community in which I am, you know, come from and live in is hell on earth.
Yes.
And people who have no hope whatsoever, and they escape through drugs and alcohol because it's the only thing that makes any sense to them, and the sheer numbers of people that we are talking about is just unbelievable. So
yes,
and many of them probably don't know anything about Teen Challenge.
Yes.
And so it's, you know, like I said, I'm going to reach out to you guys again, because if you have this facility and you guys are doing that, and you are giving people a chance to change and save their lives. You know, we got to make sure that people are aware of that. And it's just block by block, person by person. You change the neighborhood and the community by having people heal.
Yeah.
You know, one by one.
And this is a really amazing opportunity. Like I said, we pray for this, and we literally do go out into the streets block by block, like you just said. And so for you to just see our truck and call us up and give us this amazing opportunity to present this over a radio to a lot of people is, it's more than just, it's divine to me.
You know, so let's, many, many, you know, parents are engaged in right now and going through recovery. How do you begin to, you know, have this conversation with your children? You say you have a 17-year-old, you've got a couple of young ones too, and so while you're going through, and I don't mean you personally, I mean all of these people who are going through, it's not easy to have your children you know, there and saying to them, hey, mom, where are you? You know, you obviously had to experience that. But for those others who are going through it, And are your children allowed to come see you at all during the recovery? I mean, how do those things work?
We really focus on rebuilding those family relationships. We've got family day every Saturday, family visits, and then phone calls throughout the week. So even though you're not together, you're just maintaining that contact and that touch, and they can count on, hey, it's Friday night, I know mom's going to call, to have that consistency. And we've created spaces. We've got a great patio outside, and we can be outside in Wisconsin. And it's really a home where the women live and where the men live. So we create that environment for visits and then passes to go home for a night at some point in the program and see what's it going to be like when I go back. And then they come back and say, hey, this worked great. This didn't. We try to strengthen them and prepare them for when they do return.
Because in many instances, the only thing that changed is you.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you can go back, the same pressures that were there prior to you leaving are still there. And so those things, we'll talk about that a little bit after the break when we bring back Bobby Usborne. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. We'll be right back. Until you use me up. Until you use me up. Talking about you, useless people. It all depends on what you do. It ain't too bad the way you and me, cause I sure am. We shall run across the sky and illuminate the night. Oh, I will try and guide you to better times and brighter days. Don't be afraid. Call up the ladder to the roof where we can see heaven. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. As we get ready to wrap up our Stay With Teen Challenge this morning, I just wanted to bring back, Mr. Bobby Usborne. And, you know, you talked about as a young boy being starting off and kind of rebellious a little bit, I would guess.
Yes.
You know, as a father of three sons, I know a little bit about boys being rebellious. And so how were you when you first?
I was about 14, 15 years old when I had actually started using marijuana.
Peer pressure.
And yeah, peer pressure. I came from a broken home. Well, I thought it was a good home growing up. I mean, There was a family love there that I thought was love because that's what I was introduced to.
Right.
But I found out as the years went on that, marijuana was heavily a part of our home. Drinking was a part of our growing up. And it just seemed like a way of life for our family. And I guess I kind of just fell into that training, if you call it, from my parents. And, they never forced anything on me, but just being around it and when I was my environment, I felt like it was okay, to smoke pot. I thought it was okay to smoke cigarettes. Drinking was just a part of life, And because that started so early, it really just became a part of my life. But then my parents got separated, divorce played a role. At that point, mom wanted to have the structure. I wanted dad.
Right.
And dad had no structure. Dad was a free will guy.
Right.
And he just did what he wanted. He was a DJ. He was involved with the party scene.
Right.
And I seen the life he was living. He didn't really want to have structure for me. So I left the home at an early age. And I moved to the south. I'm from Chicago. I moved to the south side of Chicago. Got involved with gangs. Lived a pretty ripping and running life, so to speak. And I had no care in the world for anybody. I met a young woman at a young age who became the mother of my three children. And she had a we were like two opposites attract. She was living this Christian life, raised in a Christian home. I was raised in a home that was totally separated from God. And I mean, we knew of God, yeah, but it wasn't practiced very much in the home.
Well, she wanted a bad boy.
Yeah, and I wanted a good girl. So, you know, we kind of attracted. I wanted her life, she wanted mine. And and we became best friends. I got married at a young age, 21 years old. At that point in my life, I found out that my father and uncle and other people were involved with crack cocaine. At that point, I had been already selling cocaine and sniffing cocaine. And, you know...
So clearly this impacted your school and all those kind of things.
Oh, yeah, I dropped out early. My dad signed right off for me right at my freshman year. At that time, back in the 90s, you could drop out at 16 years old with the parents' consent. It was no big deal, and they allowed me to. And I chose that path because there was more freedom in that, and there wasn't structure, and there wasn't responsibility, and I could just live and do whatever I wanted.
So when a person comes in, and after they go through the intake and all those kinds of things, let's talk a little bit about what some of the training is, okay, right? I mean, what are they going to be taught? What do you do?
So for me, Jacqueline does most of the work, but when they come into the men's home, I'm having a one-on-one with them, asking what the reason why they're here. I want to know what's the reason they bring themselves here, what happened in their life that caused them to feel like they needed to be in an inpatient program.
So Jacqueline, so it, psychologically, there's a lot of different layers of a person's life that you have to get through. It's not like you got 400 counselors or a counselor for each individual. Let's talk a little bit about how you can begin to bring all of these different people, different lives, because part of the recovery is the people around you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and everybody's recovering as a team.
Mm-hmm. That growth really happens in community, even just the fact that there's a range of ages. So you've got some ladies in their early 20s that think, maybe don't really need this. But you've got other ladies maybe in their 40s that have lived some life, had consequences, and can say, you're getting a shot at life here. If you can take this seriously, you're really going to be free. So that's powerful. And we have 14 group studies classes that we teach throughout the year. So we've got volunteers of the community that come in and teach those. So everybody's getting that. I think we mentioned a few: angered personal rights, temptation, attitudes, how to obey authority. I mean, just simple stuff. And then these real tailored classes that are just for each individual. So we've got advisors that meet with them and really develop a relationship over the year. And a lot of times trust is just shot because of the people that you've been running with, or again, if there's been abuse. So we create this new framework for trusting relationships. And those advisors really get to know the students in their care.
You know, Bobby, recovery, you didn't just walk out. How long were you in at the facility?
Right now?
No, during your recovery?
So for me, my story is just a little bit different. I came in Teen Challenge at a young age, at 23.
Oh, okay.
And I graduated Teen Challenge. I did the entire program. I went on and did a reentry part of the program, was kind of like an intern after. And I moved on from there. I became successful with my job. I was a store director for Pick and Save. Moved my family up from Chicago into Milwaukee. Became one of the store, like I said, the store directors. But go ahead.
So my point is, once you walked out of Teen Challenge, the world didn't change totally. The world was still what it was. The only change was you.
Correct.
What about AA, you know, Narcotics Anonymous, and going to those kinds of programs? Did you have to go to aftercare?
I mean, they would want you to have some type of aftercare program. We're not just going to let somebody finish the program and just release them. We're going to want to come up with a plan. And that's usually, I'd say, developed in our eighth month. We start talking about that kind of stuff.
We have this exit survey that they start on, and it's almost like an interview. Are you ready to graduate? Did you think about this area? So you take inventory of your whole life. And some people will say, oh, I was planning on going back home. I think I actually need to go over with this relative in this other state. And so it kind of unearths some issues that you might not have known were there. And then we're always available, but you do have to make that choice to stay connected. And we try to make it as easy as possible.
So again, what is a phone number that people can reach if they need?
It's area code 414-748-HELP. That's 414-748-4357.
All right. I want to thank you guys for coming in. Like I said, it won't be the last time. I want to, again, special thanks to Jennifer Harper. She is the associate director. Mr. Bobby Usborne, he is the intake intern, and Ms. Jacqueline Klein. And, you know, thank you again. I'll make sure that we do this again. Been a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, we've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And I want to welcome my next guest, State Representative David Bowen. And let me say this before I even get into that.
Good morning, Brother Earl.
Hey, man. You know, I try to get people to understand how long it's been. Man, I'm looking at you, mm-hmm. and I'm watching all that gray in your beard.
That's how long it's been. That is how long it's been.
And I remember, you know, the first time that I got a chance to meet you, and I was at a different radio station, and you were a tender young guy, tender age. You must have been about 24, 25 years old, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, what's interesting, too, is that, and good morning, Milwaukee. Good morning, yeah. Waukesha. Honored to be on today. I first met you when I was a teenager.
Uh-oh.
At WMCS.
Yes.
1290.
You were a teenager?
Yikes. Yeah.
Wow. You got all that gray in your beard?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I didn't have all this white hair either. but I do recall, and yeah. I'm sure you'll remember this because I had you on many times. Mm-hmm. I always said you were my favorite trickster. Oh, I mean politician. that you were my favorite politician. Remember?
I do. I do. Absolutely.
Because I saw a young man who, at a time that I thought that my generation's time in leadership was up, and just to see a young brother like you, you know, with your talents and all of those things, I was so impressed by you. And I always said, as the years went on, you were always my favorite elected official. And I got to tell you, with you. Mayor Cavalier Johnson, County Executive David Crowley, Lieutenant Governor and candidate for, you know, United States Senate Mandela Barnes. Man, you guys don't know the impact that you have on black men of my generation who have longed to see men in leadership. People may get angry with me, but I don't care. For so long in our community, black women have been in those leadership positions. I'm not opposed to black women.
And we celebrate black women.
Yeah, they don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
You know, my wife is a woman, my sisters, my mom. Mm-hmm. I'm not anti-woman. But to see black men in those leadership positions, I think is a wonderful thing to see. Let's talk a little bit. We're going to get into the race and all those kind of things, but man, let's talk about what's been happening at the state level. You are still a state rep for now. Man, I've been so frustrated with the state, and you've been there. How were you able to, you know, function with what appeared to be your legislative brethren on the other side of things, mm-hmm. doing everything they could to prevent the city of Milwaukee from moving forward?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's interesting. My first real intersection with state government was in 2010 as the unions of our state were being attacked. Right. Workers were being attacked. And I joined in those protests with some of the most amazing people I've ever met. And the energy to be able to defend and hold the line against some of the most extreme right-wing interests in the country. And then, lo and behold, I then get a chance years later to actually run for office and to serve as a legislator. It's interesting. I came in 2015, complete Republican control. I feel like now it's hard for people to even remember what that was like.
I know.
Republicans under Scott Walker controlled the Senate, the Assembly, and the Governor's House, and they were running roughshod over everything. And
arrogantly.
Absolutely. I find it interesting that I've been able to be there for the transition, to advocate, to work on the political side, to help elect Governor Evers and Democrats statewide. I even served in the Democratic Party as vice chair. And to be able to get back to the grassroots work that we had to do to reestablish ourselves to winning elections again, that was real work. And I served under Martha Lanning as well. So it was very valuable to be able to see this transition of now in shared government where Governor Evers brings a balance to the state. He with the Assembly Democrats where I serve, and the Senate Dems were able to hold the line on his vetoes. And we possibly, in this next election cycle, have the threat of going back to complete Republican control again, where we won't be able to stop anything, if that's the case.
You know, man, you're from the city that I've lived in for 67 years. And we watch our city, and we watch the pain, and we watch the fact that part of what is wrong in our city is the lack of resources that really our city deserves and yet is denied access to by, you know, the brethren that you're dealing with on the state level. And yet I keep hearing people say, well, you know, all Republicans aren't bad. And so, you know, you guys are there, so you do see some good Republicans, but I don't know any because I'm not there. And so how does it feel? Because it's not just the state of Wisconsin. There's probably about another 30 state houses where Republicans have total control, and this is the result of it. I mean. And I don't know if people really understand that part of the problems that we are dealing with in the city of Milwaukee, at the root of a lot of them, are the fact that we live in a society, in a state, where Republicans are controlling these things and have locked themselves in, and it's almost in perpetuity that they're going to continue to control these things. How do we get around that, man?
And my Republican colleagues have held the whole state back from the progress and the solutions that we know get to the root of putting our state on track to actually move forward when it comes to the same things that everybody is frustrated about right now. Safety, ensuring that we can reduce the situations and the incidents that are happening right now where people are losing their lives.
Yeah,
I just saw the press conference with Chief Norman saying that he is asking everybody to help and put whatever they can on the table to address the violence that we're seeing. And we have a Republican majority in the legislature that is refusing to listen. They're refusing to do anything to keep firearms out of the hands of people that should not have them. They are refusing to invest in violence prevention and to ensure that there's sustainable funding. We were the ones that brought our office, brought the pleas of advocates on violence prevention to double down our investments to Governor Evers, and he listened. He used ARPA funds to invest in violence prevention efforts all over the state, and especially in Milwaukee. And we now have a Republican majority that needs to understand that these investments are critical and that we're not being forced to choose between supporting funding for police departments and violence prevention staff or programs. We can go hand in hand in doing this together and have a collaborative approach.
You know, Representative Bowen, it you know, from the perspective of Republicans who call here and who we know, their response is, well, you guys have had Democrats controlling things in the city of Milwaukee for so long, and so we don't support that, because if you want things to get fixed, then you need to elect Republican. I mean, have you heard that insanity?
I've definitely heard that nonsense. and this is the funny thing, right? At the end of the day, you have leaders in Milwaukee that are trying to do everything that they can. But local municipalities like Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee are facing the same traditional engagement that they've received from Republicans for decades.
Right.
They've continued to starve the local level. They've continued to reduce the amount of support for local governments to be able to sustain themselves.
Yeah.
And we have a trend that is, that's the wrong track to take the state forward. We have to invest in the local level. We have to give more resources. And right now, the state can't be the only one at the table that gets to eat a full plate. Everybody at the table needs to be able to eat a full plate. And there are every county, every municipality, they're struggling to keep up with the programs and services that they know that the residents need.
And that's the part of it that many don't realize. They're not just starving Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. They're starving other rural areas.
Absolutely.
With this. And yet you sometimes wonder if the rural areas really understand, you know, what is really taking place, because to continue to vote Republican in the face of this is an amazing thing to me. Listen, we've got to go to a break. In the studio, State Representative David Bowen. He's a candidate for Lieutenant Governor. We're going to talk about where you are with that and all those things. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.
Okay.
All right, welcome. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm joined by just a wonderful young man. And I'm going to have to stop calling you young because you got so much gray in that beard now.
Man.
Maybe it's premature.
I don't know. I think it's right on time, actually.
Or maybe it's the fact that you're engaged in politics and it's starting to have an impact on you. But anyway, it's State Representative David Bowen, who's a candidate for Lieutenant Governor. You know, we were talking about what's happening at the state level. Governor Evers is going to be... faced with, you know, a lot of challenges in 2024. The Republicans are going to do everything within their power, the financial power of the National Republican Party is going to come into this state to try to unseat Governor Evers, because if nothing else, Republicans have understood that it is local state government that is more powerful than the national government, and all things are local, and so they've proven that by controlling what they control on state levels. The power that Governor Evers has and has been wielding to prevent total control by Republicans was something that was given to Governor Walker. And, you know, that gave him that unlimited power. I don't think they ever thought that, you know, Walker would be gone and that a Democrat would wind up with that kind of power. And it's kind of thrown them for a loop, right?
Absolutely. And you can tell by how they're governing.
Yeah.
You know, listen, Governor Evers has done an amazing job of getting back to the core things that people need. And when you measure the progress that his administration has made on a number of different fronts of infrastructure, making sure that families had the supports they need during a pandemic,
right.
And supporting small businesses to get back on their feet after the just how the recession caused by the pandemic affected everybody in our economy. And the Biden administration being able to build progress as well. We're talking about possibly in this next upcoming election cycle, things actually going back to Republican complete control instead of keeping this balance that actually has been healthy for the state, that's been healthy for our future. And I think it's important to recognize there are a number of us that have been helping to champion the governor's agenda and everything that we need to do for residents of the city of the state of Wisconsin.
You know what the governor has been able to do is because he was given some of the greatest power of any governor in this country. That's what Scott Walker had, and now he's able. And if you look at all the different things that he's prevented from happening, that would have punished communities like ours even more, then you'll get to understand why it's critically important that he remains there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's no way in with what we are dealing with now that we can afford to have Governor Evers taken away from that position and a Rebecca Clayfish or any, you know, of those people.
Mm-hmm.
To come in and take control, because our community is faced with enough issues now without having to deal with that. But let's do this, man. So you've made a decision. You were, as you stated, you were the vice chair of the Democratic Party for a number of years as a very young man. What were you able to learn from that?
I was able to build connections, grassroots connections all over the state.
Right.
I was able to hear directly from some of the most contributing members of the party and those new influx of Democrats as you had the 2016 election cycle that included a number of young people being involved in politics, and especially in party level politics for the first time. You know, there is a path forward to be able to continue to have a big tent party with so many different perspectives and viewpoints, but we all still believe in the main core issues that still unify us. And there is a way to unify the whole left, the folks that lean left, and even those independents that have joined us as well, to be able to keep this state, especially as you look at the whole trajectory of the country. Wisconsin has continued to be the outlier of one of the most important states, as a toss-up state, as a purple state.
So what's your thought process on Democrats on even the national level? And you hear constantly about the big tent that Democrats have, but then you have progressives who are saying, you know, we're not getting the things done that we want to have done. And then you've got the moderate Democrats, and you've got, when you say you've got a big tent, it means you've got all these different views of people who say we're Democrats, and they don't always come together. And the question becomes sometimes, whose vision is going to win out, and how far are we willing to push this before we make a decision that we have to be all on one accord in order for us to be able to get anything accomplished?
I mean, it reminds me of what it will take for Governor Evers to run in the midterms, when usually there is historically a backlash against the incumbent president. Obama saw that in 2010. And what we have to do in this moment is to unify our base. We have
to
be able to
said than done.
Unify the state. Definitely easier to say, but when it comes down to it, we have more of us than it is of them, and more of us that closely align in our thoughts and perspectives than it is of them. We can do this if we are committed to doing the real hard work.
So let's clarify, when you say more of us than there are of them, meaning more Democrats in this country than Republicans.
And I would say even there are more of us that agree on the issues,
okay,
right? That believe that the wealthy should pay their fair share, that believe that we need to invest into our systems of education and our young people, that believe that we have held off on some of the biggest transformative policy points, from legalizing
marijuana
to having these healthcare in our country that isn't based on how much money you have. So there are so many things that we know that when it comes to the issues, whether you are a Democrat, a Republican, an independent, whether you lean left or lean right, there are sometimes way more of us that are all agreeing on these issues rather than opposing and saying we can't do any of those things, that the future just can't take. The real trajectory that our state should have to be able to be better.
So my guest is State Representative David Bowen. He's a candidate for Lieutenant Governor. Phone lines are open, as always, at 844-967-2789. I'm glad you're here. A lot to talk about. We'll be right back.